Hello, and welcome to another edition of the LinuxQuestions.org podcast. First up, LQ updates. As you have probably noticed, I'm a little bit behind on doing the regularly scheduled podcasts. I typically like to do one a week or so, and it's been at least a month, maybe actually closer to a month and a half, since I was able to do the last one, and I do apologize for that. The one great thing when I don't do a podcast for a little while is I actually get a ton of feedback encouraging me to do one, and that is helpful to get me motivated. And this podcast now is actually a direct result of a couple people touching base and seeing if I had discontinued them. I definitely didn't discontinue them, don't plan to discontinue them. I just kind of been traveling a lot and kind of a lot of things going on in late March, early April. Unfortunately, that will probably continue through most of April. I'm going to try my best to get one more podcast in near the middle or near the end of April, but in May things should return to normal. And while on the topic of travel, LQ is a proud sponsor, and I will be attending both Lug Radio Live, which is in San Francisco this weekend, and then the MySQL Conference and Expo, which is in Santa Clara at the beginning of next week. Now, if you'll be attending either one of those conferences, and I do highly recommend them both, and you'd like to connect, do drop me a line. We were lucky enough to be able to give away a full pass completely free to the MySQL Conference and Expo, which was about, I believe, a $1,200 value. And we do plan to do the same thing for both OSCON and Ubuntu Live, so stay tuned to the podcast or my blog or the main LQ site for more details on that. Now, if you'll be in San Francisco this weekend and would like to attend Lug Radio Live and don't have a ticket yet, do let me know and I'll get you a free ticket. I had also planned to attend the Linux Foundation Collaboration Summit, which is yesterday and today. Unfortunately, due to a conflict, I actually had to cancel that. From what I've been reading, it looks like it was another great event. I know last year it was really beneficial, and I hope to attend that again next year. The last LQ update I have is a change in the advertising policy at LinuxQuestions.org. Now, as I've said many, many times before, it's really the members that make LQ what it is. And the time and dedication that many members put in really is significant. Now, as a thank you for that, I'd like to announce that we're testing a new advertising policy. Now, first, we've removed some ads for all logged-in members who have a few posts. Now, where I'm going to draw that line eventually, it'll probably be somewhere between 1 and 10 posts, kind of right now just doing some testing on there. At that level of posts, you're going to see significantly decreased ads, and depending on your resolution, you'll probably see none above the fold or above the scroll, as they say, and it's going to leave an ad, you know, near the bottom on the side and one at the bottom. Now, for members with over 500 posts, which mean they really have a significant time invested in LQ, you'll see absolutely no ads at all. And this is really our way of thanking you for the time and effort that you've put into contributing to the site. Now, obviously, it's absolutely critical and a number one priority for me that LQ remains sustainable, so I can't guarantee that this policy is going to last forever, but I can say that I'll do my best to keep it like this and even try to scale it back more if that is indeed possible. Now, on to the news. I was able to attend OSBC a little while back, which is the Open Source Business Conference, and during this podcast, I'm just going to cover what went on kind of at that event. Well, the first thing I'm going to cover is the opening keynotes. And the first morning of OSBC opened with Jim Whitehurst, who's the new president and CEO of Red Hat, and Steve Pearson, who's the VP of Advanced Technologies at CBS Interactive. To start things off, the audience at OSBC this year was, as a percentage, much less lawyer-dense than it had been the last couple of years that I've attended. And there were more CEOs and CIOs and CTOs, which really was the initial focus of the conference anyways. And I'd say that's just another indication of the fact that open source is really becoming more and more mainstream. Moving on to Jim's keynote, if there were any remaining doubts about the selection of Jim as the new CEO of Red Hat, I really think that his opening keynote should help put them to rest. He really and clearly, I think, gets it. Now, he underscored that he plans to focus Red Hat on enterprise infrastructure and also has plans to get more clients engaged with the open source communities that comprise the suite of products that Red Hat supports. And I really think that's a great, great thing. And he openly admitted that it's something that Red Hat has been, quote unquote, lousy at. And for a CEO to come out and say that, you know, you have to give him kudos. And I think them getting the community involved really is an important thing. He also admitted, quite frankly, that he's still learning a lot, which, once again, is refreshing coming from a CEO. And open source CEOs do tend to be a little bit more transparent. If you take, say, Martin Mikos as an example, his talks are always very good because you can tell he's just a straight shooter in a way that you just don't usually get from a CEO. I wasn't sure if Jim, coming from a more traditional background at Delta, would kind of continue that trend, not being an open source guy, but he definitely did. Now, just to give you a little idea about where he came from, his IT budget when he was the COO at Delta was more than the $500 million in yearly revenues at Red Hat. That being said, I think it's pretty clear that under Jim, Red Hat will almost certainly become the first $1 billion a year pure play open source company, and I think that's pretty exciting. Moving on to Steven, he underscored the massive amount of open source that CBS Interactive uses, and his quote was, "Every bit of what we do touches open source in some way." And he said that allowed them to easily scale things like March Madness and Fantasy Sports that quickly scale up and down as seasons change, and you know, March Madness obviously isn't very long, but during that span, it's really important that that stays up, and allows them to have the flexibility in their infrastructure to easily support different applications at different times and redeploy things kind of seamlessly. He also covered some of the biggest challenges he sees with companies such as CBS Interactive and them giving back to open source. And to him, at least in his mind, it's not about competitors getting a hold of the code or getting kind of taking part of that competitive advantage, with that, which I kind of found interesting. He said it's really more the work involved in cleaning it up and packaging it, and also, even once it's cleaned up and packaged, the time that's involved with finding the correct committers and just the whole kind of acceptance process. And some points they found too laborious, even when they wanted to contribute and had packaged it up and cleaned it up. They just kind of gave up not being able to find the right person or the right process. And to go kind of back to what Jim focused on, if Red Hat was able to better engage some of these large companies to have Red Hat be that intermediary or be the leader there, and I'm sure Novell and Ubuntu, once a process was fleshed out, would most certainly follow. Moving on, the first two panels that I attended were the future of open source and the future of operating systems. The future of open source included reps from Ingress, MySQL AB, Sugar CRM, Ubuntu, and Acquia. And as a couple of the panels and sessions that I attended, this one was standing room only. And a bunch of interesting topics were covered, and it really got me thinking about where open source is going, kind of medium to long term. And while commercial open source was the main focus, it really got me thinking, and they made some salient points about some non-commercial aspects as well. Now, the one thing they did differently that I hadn't seen in a panel in the past was they actually had some audience participation via texting that were live polls, and kind of it steered the direction. And I thought that was a great way to kind of keep the audience engaged, and I'd anticipate seeing more of that at future conferences. And I should note here, kind of for the sake of time, I'm glancing over some really good talks in just a minute or two. Most of the panels and talks do have some slides and other things available at the OSBC site. So if I do quickly cover something that you're more interested in hearing about, you can feel free to drop me a line and I can discuss it more in depth, or just go to the OSBC site where there should be some supporting materials for you. Now, the future of the operating systems, when you get reps from Intel, Sun, Novell, and VMware talking about the future of operating systems, you know it's going to get interesting, and this panel did not disappoint. It was one of the more lively panels, and I think it was good to get the different perspectives that these companies had, considering what their focuses are. The one kind of representation that I would have liked to see would be, say, Amazon with what they're doing with AWS, and that would have added, I think, an interesting perspective of a possible future, or even Google, who's starting to roll some of that stuff out. So that particular area was underrepresented directly. It was certainly discussed, though. Now, one thing that I think was clear at this panel is that there are a number of different possible futures for the operating system, and a lot of it is going to come down to timing, implementation, and as these things go, probably a little luck. Virtualization, I think, obviously is going to be a piece somewhere, but where that really lies remains to be seen. I really think there's a decent chance that we could see some of that virtualization going down a couple layers into, say, the CPU or the BIOS firmware area at a commodification level that would really make it hard for a company like VMware to make a ton of money. Or there is also a chance that it could go the other way and the Zens and the VMwares would do quite well. And obviously, in the middle of that distinct layer versus BIOS firmware, I think there's a chance that some of the operating system vendors could roll virtualization tightly into the OS itself, which would once again make it kind of difficult for some of the virtualization-only players to do well. But then, obviously, they become very good M&A targets, so they'd still make out. The next panel I'm going to cover was what open source can learn from Microsoft and the proprietary world. Now, this panel was moderated by Stephen Wally and included Gene from Alfresco, Neelan from SpringSource, Sam Ramji from Microsoft, and Jim Zemlin from the Linux Foundation. Just a few quick points that were brought up was that Microsoft has more community around it than some people in the open source community either realize or give it credit for. Jim made a point that we really need to learn from how Microsoft rolled out its ISV program and the whole Designed for Windows kind of program. And he admitted that the LSB is a start of that, obviously not the end of that. And the MSDN kind of paradigm would also be a good thing for the Linux community to be able to kind of focus on and learn from. Now, Sam's main point was that we really need more consistency in the user experience, and I could not agree with that more. And Neelan also brought up a good point in that we really need better developer marketing in concert with better traditional marketing. And this is obviously one thing that Microsoft is very good at, and we could learn a ton from them in this area. Now, one good point about community that was brought up that I don't think I'd ever heard it worded in this way is that a community is as defined by the people it does not or cannot include as much as who is included. And proprietary models, I think, tend to have better defined rules as to who can and cannot participate. And so Rommel from the audience brought up, should open source? And that's a question I've been thinking a lot about. I don't have an answer. I really don't like to exclude anyone. But maybe better defined boundaries could benefit us if kind of implemented correctly. That's something I'd love for, if anyone out there has an opinion on that, to comment on the LQ Radio site. A fact brought up by Sam that I didn't know is that 96% of the $51 billion of Microsoft revenue last year actually came indirectly. And I think this should underscore just how important it is for us to get OEMs and ISVs and VARs involved more in the Linux community. I know Ubuntu is focusing on this, and HP might be a big player coming into this a little bit, but we need more OEMs, and I don't think there's any doubt about that. And a final note, it was not nearly as rowdy as I kind of had anticipated. I figured, you know, you have someone from the Linux Foundation, you know, Alfresco competes directly with SharePoint, and then someone from Microsoft. I kind of expected a little back and forth, and even from the crowd maybe. This was probably one of the tamest, friendliest panels out of all the panels I attended, which I thought was interesting and possibly underscores the direction kind of Microsoft and the Linux community are taking together. The next panel that I attended was the State of the Open Source Database Market, and this one was quite a bit more heated. This panel consisted of Matthew Aslett moderating from the 451 group, and then Andy from EnterpriseDB, Roger from Ingress, Ken Jacobs from Oracle, and Zach from MySQL. I think it's pretty clear that the open source database market is an area where companies are competing very effectively against their proprietary counterparts, especially at the low end, but even in the case of Ingress and EnterpriseDB and some others at the mid to high end. But it's also an area where the open source participants are still figuring out both their long-term business models and their niche within the open source database ecosystems. And there's a lot more, let's say, inner open source competition in this space than there are in a lot of other spaces that might only have one or two strong open source vendors. It also became increasingly clear to me here that many of the proprietary vendors still don't fully understand open source, the benefits of open source, the reasons people want open source, etc. And I really think that they overestimate the importance of Gradis and underestimate the importance of Libre. I think that's going to be a mistake long term. I'm quite sure they disagree with me at this point. But I think that's an area kind of to keep an eye on. And the last session I'm going to cover is the footnote with Brad Smith. And you really got to hand it to Brad, who's the general counsel for Microsoft, if you're not familiar with them. He delivered what they call the footnote, which is just the ending keynote. Now, you know the general counsel for Microsoft is going to have a tough crowd on his hands when he's at an open source business conference. But despite that, he agreed to talk for 30 minutes, then get questioned by a panel that included Mark Shuttleworth, James Bottomley, Andy Updegrove, and Stephen O'Grady for 30 minutes, and then get questioned by the crowd for 30 minutes. So 90 minutes he was on stage. And as you can imagine, some of the questions from the audience were, let's say, less than constructive. But all things considered, and overall, I think things went really, really well. And here's a couple of highlights. Unfortunately, I didn't really take notes during this, just because it was kind of at the end, and the iPhone is spectacularly bad for taking notes. I used to kind of take conference notes on the Trio. But Brad did state definitively that, in his opinion, the general open source community does absolutely respect IP as an intellectual property. And I think this is the first time I've heard that, at least, that someone from Microsoft said this in such a pointed and direct way. And that's, I think, a step in the right direction. He also openly and freely admitted that Microsoft had some messaging problems around Linux and open source in the past. We're referring to things like a cancer, for instance, but there are, of course, many. He did say, though, that in his opinion, Microsoft has legitimately changed its opinion on the topic, and he really underscored that that's fueled by customer demand. He also assured the crowd that Microsoft is generally interested in wider interoperability with the open source community, but he did admit that there are issues around both patents and some other items on the periphery that really, really need to be worked out and that there aren't good answers to right now. And he also remarked, when asked about the fueled by customer demand, that while Microsoft did not initially lead this effort, market leaders typically don't, which I guess is a valid point. Now, when asked more specifically about the patent issue by James, and then also by an audience member, and for those of you not familiar with James Bottomley, he's the CTO of CLI, but he's also a major Linux kernel maintainer and part of the Linux Foundation. And James was, I think, pretty pointed and pretty direct in his questioning, and very correct in his questioning. Brad's response was that, you know, there's no easy answer to this problem. But he did add that he himself and Microsoft in general were more than willing to continue a dialogue, but that compromises would be needed on both sides. And it was pointed out, correctly in my opinion, that on some of the issues about open source methodology when it comes to patents, there just really can't be a compromise because it's kind of antithetical to the whole point of open source. So I think that kind of left things up in the air a little bit. It's good to see that they're willing to compromise now. Where that will go or whether it will go anywhere remains to be seen. But I think it's clear, based on not only this footnote, but just some conversations with other Microsoft people, that Microsoft really are opening up to the idea of change. They're not there yet, I don't think, but they're getting there, and many individuals are definitely there. I still remain skeptical that real change is possible while Ballmer remains in charge. You know, I've said that many times before, but I do think that the beginning of the foundation can start to be laid here, and I really do think that's what's going on. Whether that foundation will lead to something substantial or whether this is just lip service that will eventually crumble, I think it remains to be seen. Time obviously will make it quite clear, but I have to admit that I'm cautiously optimistic, let's say, for the first time. Very cautiously. That's all I have for now, but thanks for listening.